Well, whether you have a Victorian or an Edwardian or maybe a prairie-style home, I think the older homes have a lot of character. They're lovely to look at from the outside. And once you get through the door, there are usually lots of interesting features to enjoy. But it's not a lot of fun when you're faced with high energy bills and a hard time keeping it cool in the summertime, or maybe really warm in the winter. Hi, Larry Mueller here. A couple of guest experts for you today. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry comes by every couple of months to share information on making sure our homes are in great shape and energy efficient, at least as energy efficient as possible. And Chad, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
And with Chad today, Sam Breidenbach, who is the owner and president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison. And Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
First-time visitor. You've had, tell us about TDS Construction a little bit.
Well, we've been in business since 1985. Our primary focus is really older homes. We are very involved in energy efficiency in pretty much every project that we do. And we have 14 employees right now. We're on the isthmus, and we enjoy every aspect of what we do, and our employees, I can say the same for them.
And Chad, you know, I've asked you this in the past, but it's been a while, so talk a bit about Chad's Carpentry.
Yeah, well, we've been around since 1992, and we also work mostly on older homes and do additions, but mostly renovation of older space. And we also focus on the whole house, making sure that it's comfortable, efficient, durable, that the systems work well. And right now I have a staff of just six, a great group of people, very dedicated, and we too really love what we do.
Well, as you guys look at this, and you obviously both have a lot of experience, what are some of the consistent problem areas for energy efficiency in an older home? Chad, start with you.
Well, older homes typically were hollow. They have hollow cavities on the exterior. And so when they would get wet, the air would move through those cavities and dry them out. And so, and this was a time when most homes were either heated by the hearth, a fireplace, or slightly newer homes, you know, might have a furnace. But there wasn't as much concern about energy efficiency. And there was little to no insulation. So the challenge is to be able to envelop that structure in a way that allows the original or remaining building materials to still dry out if they get wet, to make sure you're not trapping moisture in the walls. And when you have old wiring, old knob and tube wiring, for example, that wiring as a technology has to remain out in the air so that it can give off heat. Those wires get very hot. And so when we hear about old wiring causing a house to burn down, that's often because old knob and tube wiring has been insulated and then it's heated up and caused combustion. Yeah. So there are a lot of issues.
And Sam, you might add a little to that as well.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. You know, one of the biggest challenges in, you know, making older homes energy efficient is really preserving the original detailing and the integrity of the architecture of the house while you bring it up to 21st century standards. So the challenges there with respect to the human occupants, the safety, the comfort, and really preserving the architectural integrity, we find to be the biggest challenge. But, you know, with everything that we do, our first motto is really do no harm, both really to the safety of the occupants of the home. But then the next really priority is, you know, in historic preservation, is to make sure that you're not compromising those elements that really make that house special.
Yeah, lots of good things to talk about. As you guys were talking, I was thinking of our home, which is, you know, 1906 four-square home, which three stories, and we actually have, really went right down to the studs to start over in that home because it's just the old knob and tube and no insulation. But now we have a beautiful home, and, you know, we tried to keep the character of the home inside and out, and kept our wood flooring, and, you know, it looks pretty nice now.
And is it really comfortable?
Very comfortable, yeah. And my wife likes it warm. I mean, she likes to keep it at 70 degrees in the house, you know. And actually, she likes it a lot warmer than I like it, to be perfectly honest. So it's completely comfortable. And we have a 9-year-old, too. So she, the two of them outvote me when it comes to what the temperature of the house is. But the costs are pretty low for the most part.
So when you restored the interior, did you bring it back to the original detailing that was in the house?
A lot of the original detailing, yes. And even the windows, all the windows in the home are replaced, and those still look like they were the original windows. Mm-hmm. But there are, you know, you can get energy-efficient windows these days that look just like the old windows would have looked. And so we really tried to do that. While at the same time, I mean, you know, it's pretty modern in a lot of ways. But we were able to maintain that sort of the look of the inside of the house.
Right. Now, there's two schools of thoughts on windows in preserving houses. And one is... restoring the existing windows to maintain that sort of character of the old wavy glass, and then really the competing interest of energy efficiency. And, you know, oftentimes when you restore an old window, you can really get similar efficiencies and still preserve that look. And that's really important to customers who really love their home and really mm-hmm. love to maintain that character.
Yeah. Talking today with Chad Spate and Sam Breidenbach, Chad with Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Sam Breidenbach, owner and president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison. Great to have them along. Thanks for listening in. Questions for our guys? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page, go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And let's go to Pete in La Crosse first. Pete, hi. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Good morning to all. Larry, I had an energy audit done on my 30-year-old house just a few months ago.
Cool.
And it revealed lots of problems with the windows. These windows were replaced since the house was built, but they were installed really lousy. When I saw the problems as shown in the pictures, I took off the oak trim, and I could see right through my house. You know, I'm not talking about light coming in. Yeah. I could see the sidewalk outside my house. So apparently they were counting on the oak trim to keep the weather out, which is not my plan. So I sealed up the windows to the frame of the house with door and window type foam, and it squirted out all over the place on the outside of the house, meaning that they didn't even extend the nailing flanges or anything when these replacement windows were installed.
No.
Yeah, really bad. So what I want the gentlemen to do, if they would please, is to talk about how to install a window properly and what can you do when you're installing new windows on a house that has the siding on it. Do you have to take the siding off to really do it properly? So that's what I want to hear.
All right. I think guys can talk about it. Chad, let's go
sure.
to you.
Well, a couple of things. It sounds like what you had is an insert window where the sashes were removed and then an entirely new unit was put into place where that old sash was. And that is a very common way to replace windows because it requires a lot less labor. There are some important steps, though, that need to be taken so that you don't have the sorts of problems you have. One is when you install a window, it's very important for it to be flashed at the bottom, down at the sill. Typically this is done whether it's an insert or whether the entire unit has been torn out and a new window is put into the rough opening. That's put in so that any water that goes down through the window unit will be collected and basically shunted out of the structure to the exterior. Then on the sides and top, it should be sealed to whatever building paper or rain plane has been installed underneath the siding. And that's going to keep you from being able to see through when you remove your interior trim. It's going to keep the water out, most importantly, because it's on that exterior layer that you want to be controlling for water. And then behind that, there should be some sort of insulation, preferably a caulk or foam, which is not going to allow air to move through. It'll give you a good air barrier, as well as to back up any potential for water damage. And then on the inside, of course, the trim will overlay that seam. But that's purely a decorative piece of material. It's not designed to keep out wind and water mm-hmm. and moisture.
Yep.
Those are the basics of window installation. Generally, you're going to have a better overall performing window when you tear out the entire window. And the reason is that whatever was done behind the original trims on the exterior and interior is often not touched when you do an insert.
Yeah.
And so if that is a leaky cavity or if there wasn't proper water detailing done, then there's no opportunity to address that when you do the insert window. But having said that, insert windows are considerably less expensive, and so many people will do it just because it makes it possible to improve the glass, which is often the lowest performing part of an old window.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
When I get around to doing the siding some year, I'm going to have to plan on doing the rain plane and detailing that because it probably wasn't done right. And when you said flashing, that is what, the bottom of the rough opening but outside the window? Not the window sill, correct, but under that?
Correct. Well, and yes, typically it's under the sill of the window. There's flashing installed on the rough opening. And then if anything goes through the sill of the window, it hits that flashing. But the entire perimeter of the window is technically flashed because we're keeping the water out from the edge of the window jamb continuous to the wall of the house behind the siding.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling, Pete. Appreciate your call. Talking preserving our historic features in our older homes. We're updating energy efficiency in some other homes and certainly ready to answer your home question when you give us a call. Larry Mueller here. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, Sam Breidenbach of TDS Custom Construction in Madison. Our guests, I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in today. Larry Mueller here with Chad Spade and Sam Breidenbach as we talk with them about your home. And Nelson in Round Lake, Illinois, has a question, so let's go right to him. Nelson, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking the call. The gentleman that introduced the program got me quite confused because they said, I must have misunderstood, but they said, I thought they said that when you have an older home, you got to leave out insulation and then you got to leave it so it breathes or something like that. And my idea was when you got an older home, the first thing you got to think about is to get some insulation in it in order to heat it.
Yeah, I think what Chad was talking about was he was telling what the older homes were once like. So when they were constructed, often that was the case. Chad, am I right there?
Yes, that's correct. The issue is that oftentimes those houses depended on the open cavities for the wiring system and for the drying out of material when it gets wet. And so I wasn't arguing that we should keep it that way, but when we put insulation into the cavities, we have to make sure that we aren't going to have new problems created by wet building materials and overheating wiring. So that was my point.
I see. Well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nelson. Harold in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Harold.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
We have a porch that faces south, and our home is about 100 years old. I've replaced the two end windows with vinyl, double hung, and across the front, I've replaced the entry door with a nice all glass door. But across the front, we've got four full-size and then two smaller ones on the side of the door. And they're kind of a special design with the window divides in them, and they have the leaded glass that's kind of sagging and very nice. But the outside on them is particularly in rough shape after that many years. They need to be reglazed and stripped down. And I don't know if I could replace just those strips around the glass. I'm concerned about that old glaze is so hard to remove. And, you know, in the process, if I used heat, if I would maybe break that glass. And I don't know. I could rebuild those windows perhaps in my shop. I don't know if anybody would custom make that sort of thing. I suppose it'd be so pricey if I brought them in and said, here, make me vinyl ones just like it, and we'll reuse my glass. The second part of that, just out of curiosity, it seems like that single pane, we get way more heat gain in our house than our son does, who just put in all the low-E glass and everything in his porch facing south. So I guess, you know, how would I go about stripping, and particularly on the outside? I'd like to take the windows out, but they might break in the process. They're fragile.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go to Sam. Sam?
Yeah, Harold, thanks for calling. What I would suggest is, well, first of all, the space is heated, correct?
No, it's not. But we get about, I'd say, a fourth of our heat from it, because we just have a wide open space south of us, and we get so much sunlight in there. By noon, we open the door, and the heat comes in and heats our house.
Okay. So basically, getting to the point of restoration or repairing what you have, it's relatively easy if these are double hung windows to remove them. Take the sash cords off.
No, they're fixed pane.
Oh, they're fixed panes. Okay.
Yeah, and they have small panes. They have like four across the top, and then a divide coming horizontally, and then one down the center. So there's four panes, and then four quarter panes, and then two half panes on the lower section.
Sure.
And they're right in place. They don't move.
Sure. Well, there is a special heat type iron, or, you know, it's a heat gun that works within the federal guidelines for safe lead or lead safe workmanship, that you could use, that will soften up that the glazing on the muntins, those dividers that, you know, divide the entire window up. You can take that off and then reglaze while those windows are in place. It's a little bit difficult to do that. Oftentimes, if the windows aren't that large, you can take the interior stop off and remove the windows, and then work on those in your shop, which would be much easier if it's laying on a table. Getting to the point of the heat gain that you referred to, there are storm windows that you can buy with a hard coat low-E film to reduce some of that solar gain. But then in the wintertime, you're gonna lose that heat gain benefit that you like. So, you know, there's that challenge there.
Oh no, I wouldn't want to do that. In the summer we can open up the end windows, but heat gain in the winter is tremendous, and we like that as much as we can.
Yeah.
So.
They use that. I don't know if it was linseed based. Glazing in the old days, you know, and it's really hard stuff to remove compared to newer types.
Yeah. Well, if you try this heat gun approach, hopefully that's going to work.
Yeah, I think that'll work. We restore quite a bit of, quite a few old style windows, and that's what we use in our shop.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling here. I appreciate it. Well, Irene and Phillips has been waiting a while, so let's go to Irene. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
My question is this. My daughter bought a 100-year-old home here in Phillips a year ago, which happened to be my husband's family home when he was growing up. She had a lot of work done on the interior. However, the floors are very uneven, saggy in spots. She should have been advised to do that before many of the walls were improved and new drywall put up. There's only a crawl space underneath that part of the house. Is there any way to level the house now that the new walls are up and the door jams are straightened?
Are there partitions in that area where the crawl space is, where the floors need to be stiffened?
I don't know what it looks like underneath. She lives in Nevada, and she and the family come to stay here when they're on vacations and what have you. And I haven't looked underneath the house.
Okay. Most of the house has a crawl space?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Well, you know, it is possible to do some things to improve the rigidity of the floor, though we do have to be careful whenever we start moving around a floor in a house, because you will have loads that are created by the various partitions in the home. And then, of course, a home has, by design, certain walls that are load-bearing walls, and we have to be very careful not to create further distortions in the house mm-hmm. by trying to fix, you know, one problem while we're creating another. So another thing that I'll just comment on that I would be concerned about without having seen it is that when you have a crawl space, a lot of times you can have a lot of moisture in that crawl space, and that could be contributing to problems with the floor joist if they are getting wet or damp from high humidity levels. So I'd want to assess that as well. And then it should be possible to do some things to help stiffen the floors, particularly out in clear span areas where there are no partitions to worry about. But if the concern is that the floors seem like they move as you walk over it, they're creaky, some things can be done to help just support that, to reduce the deflection. So
would you suggest having someone go in under and take a look around and put some support up where there should be support and also check for moisture?
Well, I would definitely suggest having a professional look at it and give you an assessment on what can be done. It's definitely possible
it can be fixed.
Yeah.
And then would that professional be able to tell her how to insulate underneath to warm it up a little? Because it sure is cold in the winter.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure they could do that.
Yeah, make sure that whoever you hire is a professional in home performance, and so that they assess it not only from a structural aspect but also from a insulation and moisture aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Irene, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, if you have a question about your home. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or in the case of our last caller, your daughter's home or maybe your son's home, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And by the way, let's go to the Facebook for a bit. Brandy sent us a note. My basement flooded through an electrical box near the top of the foundation wall in the last two rain events. Had an excavation company come out, trench and channel to take water away from the house until spring regrading. Is it safe for me to have an electrician caulk or somehow close up the electrical box and wall behind the box where the rain is following the wires from the septic alarm into the house? That sounds like a difficult question to answer without actually seeing the whole thing, Sam.
I think the main thing there is to replace the box, because it's, you know, anytime water gets into an electrical box, it can compromise the the safety of the wiring.
Yeah, so that's for sure. You're going to want to get that changed. Yeah. All right, Tom in Madison. Hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I've got a 1902 built house, and I'm looking to insulate the outside walls. And I hear different things about either cellulose or fiberglass. The kind of fiberglass that I understand is compressible or dense packable. Which is there? Do you have any ideas which might be better and more efficient, keep the air out?
What type of siding or cladding do you have on the house?
Asbestos cement.
Okay. Well, we've been using dense pack cellulose for many, many years, mainly on the principle that it's a hygrothermal sort of reservoir. And so what it does is if the wall gets wet, and you can pretty much bet that the interior of the wall will get wet either through vapor diffusion or, you know, bulk water coming in from the exterior. But if it does get wet, that cellulose insulation is kind of like a storage capacity, almost like a sponge, that will absorb water sort of slowly, and as well as release it and dry it out more slowly than fiberglass. Fiberglass has a tendency to, you know, when it does get wet, it really doesn't hold the water, and it can actually drain down to the bottom of the wall where, you know, it's more difficult for that wall to dry out.
And does either one of them insulate better in terms of temperature, summer or winter?
Well, I think they roughly have the same R value per inch of density. The main thing when you're retrofitting exterior walls is to make sure that it's dense packed to roughly 3 pounds per cubic foot. Because the main thing with insulation, the main thing that you want to concentrate on is preventing airflow through that cavity. Then the insulation really is the secondary priority, if you will. So making sure that you stop airflow through the cavity is your main concern.
Mm-hmm. And back to what you had said first, moisture now, I've never noticed it getting wet. Actually, that asbestos cement is over the top of cedar siding. Is some of the moisture just in the air in there, do you mean, or do you mean actual wetness?
Well, we could never be absolutely sure that, in window door penetrations in the wall, that those aren't somehow letting in water either through failed caulk or when the window was installed originally, it may not have been well detailed into the weather barrier. So without really doing a thorough analysis of how that wall is put together, we pretty much have to assume that it's going to get wet either through, you know, and a lot of it really also depends on the orientation of your house. Some sides of the house get more weather than others. But also in the wintertime, your vapor drive is going to be from more to less. So when your indoor relative humidity is higher in the wintertime, you know, that moist air is going to want to migrate towards the cold exterior surface. Mm-hmm. So there's you know, you really want a wall to dry both interior and to the exterior.
This is interesting news to me. Thank mm-hmm. you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You were going to add something, Chad.
Yeah, well, everything Sam said is correct, and I would just reiterate that because cellulose does such a good job of air sealing when it's properly installed, we, too, would recommend that product. It's mm-hmm. true, the R values are the same, but by dense packing properly, you eliminate the air movement in the cavity, and that's where that condensation can happen. As Sam suggested, air leaks into the wall, it's moist and warm, and it hits that exterior cold surface, and then it condenses in the wall, and you have moisture in the wall.
Yeah.
So,
I was thinking back to our house again and the work we had done. We did the dense pack, which was great. And then at the floor, at each floor level, we'd used a foam insulation, and that seemed to work. Has worked really well, very well.
Very good approach.
John in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, John.
All right. I have a house that has plaster glass interior, and I'm wondering where the plaster seems to be separating just a bit from the lath in an area of, say, 1 meter square. If there's a way to mechanically pull that back, the lath, and re-cement it with some kind of epoxy or other adhesives, and then if that can be done, how can I seal the cracks in a way that doesn't let the cracks reappear in short order?
Huh.
Well, I think generally when you have the plaster pulling away like that, the best approach, because the plaster itself is a cementitious material that is doesn't have any flexibility to it, you really have to just remove it and then patch the damaged area so that you get proper adhesion to that lath underlayment. Because what has happened is that the bond has broken due to settling or gravity or whatever the case may be. There could have been some moisture into the wood, and that it ultimately dried out and shrunk, and so the plaster pulled away from it. There are any number of explanations for why over time a plaster wall can deteriorate, but the only way to really repair it once it started to pull away is typically to just clear it off. Now, there, it might be possible to use some button nails or with some screws and to pull a substantial piece of intact plaster properly to the subsurface and then recoat it. But you need to have a good, well-adhered layer of primary layer of plaster over which the skim coat can make it all appear new and and proper.
Yeah.
And if I may add there, Chad was referring to these little discs that are specifically made for resecuring old plaster. And plaster really is infinitely repairable. There are some really great artisans in the Madison area who do skim coat plaster over, you know, what appears at first sight to be extremely, you know, broken down and, you know, dysfunctional plaster.
Yeah, so it can be done. Thanks a lot for calling, John. Appreciate it. An email from Sandra in Madison. She says, I'm participating in the Green Madison program, planning on insulating the outside walls of my 1925 house. It's the outside walls, getting bids from contractors, and discovered I have knob and tube wiring in the attic and who knows where else. I've been told that since my attic is sloped, an electrician would have to either cut large holes in my plaster or use wire mold to rewire the house. Is it practical from an economic stance to proceed with insulating my house? Well, not unless you take care of the knob and tube, I don't think. At least that would be my initial response. Is that correct, Sam, or not?
Right. It's you really, there are professional standards that insulation contractors and home performance professionals have to abide by. And the first thing is that, you know, you cannot insulate a wall or any cavity with knob and tube wiring in it. So that's the first thing you do. Now, you know, I'm not sure, well, since this is a Facebook message, you know, if depending upon how old your roof is, there are opportunities when you need a new roof to really do the work from the top side, which, you know, can make things easier not only for doing the electrical work but also for the insulation.
Yeah. So that's something to consider if you're, that roof is within, you know, a little bit of time to needing to be replaced. It might be as good to get it done a little early and then take advantage of that. Yeah.
The other thing that I would add is that many insurance companies are starting to insist that knob and tube wiring be torn out and updated. And you know, this has been going on for 20, 30 years now, where we've been trying to essentially update wiring. So the day will come when a homeowner will not be able to obtain fire insurance without making that update. So it's certainly an expensive thing to contemplate, and it might seem hard to justify that expense of the knob and tube being updated and removed, but it's going to have to happen.
Yep. Mary in Middleton, thank you for calling.
Hi. have a home that is 10 years old. I moved into it 2 years ago, and I didn't notice this until maybe a year ago, but the on one of the windows, there is about a foot-long area where there's maybe a quarter inch of black, and it's the interior would, you know, like you would put the molding around the window. It's between the molding that you would put and the window wood itself, and it's you know, at the base, as though there maybe it was wet and it's and the moisture was in there in the wall, maybe, and perhaps that bit of black is mold coming up. I can put a nail on it and it doesn't seem wet to me. It doesn't you know, it's not a fuzzy mold, but it's black, as though it would be a black mold. And I guess my question, and I haven't noticed that it has changed in the year since I noticed it.
Can you get a little cleaner solution on there just to check and see if it comes off?
It doesn't. I mean, I did not do that, but I mean, like if I push on my knit, I can. I don't think it's surface. It's. I'm wondering if I have to worry that there's internal damage, or if because it hasn't changed in a year. I mean, is there a black mold that would?
Well, there's a mold that's black.
Have you checked the relative humidity in your home?
It's good. I have a heat exchanger.
Right.
I think it's good.
It sounds like it's a result of condensation on the windows, but, you know, if you say you can't wipe it off, then that, you know, it may be something more, you know, deeper than that.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll find that, you know, in a particular weather condition, you know, a driving rain from the east or something, you know, that water drives into a particular window that has a slight fault in the flashing, and water is then pooling at this spot. And so it's a very rare event, and you're not likely to see it change until that rare event occurs again. I mean, sometimes that's a way to, you know, an explanation for something like this, but it's hard to know.
Yeah.
All right. Is this something that, I mean, does the insurance, checking with home insurance, I mean, if there is internal damage, do insurance companies cover things like that?
Probably not if it's normal, more or less normal wear and tear. I doubt very much they'd cover that.
Mary, what I would suggest is contacting Focus on Energy and looking in their directory for a home performance analyst to really, I think it'd be a good idea, even though your home is only 10 years old, it would be a good idea to really check up on the whether or not your HRV is balanced, and just really check up, do a blower door test, and I think that may identify some of the problems that you're having.
That's a very excellent idea, and it's for a few hundred dollars. You're going to get a lot of great information.
Sounds good.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Go to the Focus on Energy program. Frankly, if you just type Focus on Energy program Wisconsin, it's going to pop right up.
Correct.
And you are going to, I think, be happy with the results. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry, Sam Breidenbach, owner and president of TDS Custom Construction in Madison, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Talking about your home today, we update it for energy efficiency. Are there a few things that need fixing that we can help you with? By we, I don't mean me. I don't really know very much, but my guests sure do. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and Sam Breidenbach, who owns TDS Custom Construction in Madison. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. Join in with your questions. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or call at 800-642-1234. Let's see. We've got Jim in Winchester next with a question. Hi, Jim.
Morning, Larry. A quick suggestion for our future program for us would be solar voltaic for homeowners.
Okay.
And my question today for the guests has to do with insulation of a 1935 home with a brick exterior, real plaster with lath in it. I have no idea what is in those walls. And it has also a 1975 2x4 stud wall addition on it that I'm wanting to do something about, and I'm thinking about covering that part, taking the exterior composite board off because it's deteriorating anyway, and replacing it with blue styrofoam and maybe some house wrap over the top of that. So I would like some advice about insulation of both parts of the house, the brick part if necessary, or maybe I should just plain leave that alone.
All right. Sam, go ahead.
Yeah, brick cladded houses are tricky to insulate. You have to be really, you have to really analyze the way in which the wall is constructed before you go ahead and insulate the interior part, bearing wall. And I'm assuming that it's a brick veneer, correct?
Is there another type?
Well, there are solid masonry walls as well.
Oh, yeah, right. It's brick veneer then.
Okay. So the main thing is doing a thorough inspection of the brick cladding on the outside to make sure that, you know, all of the window sills are, you know, well intact. They're really well caulked. You really want to make sure that the brick isn't getting overly drenched with water, first and foremost, because once you insulate those walls, you're going to reduce the drying potential of the wall. And so the brick, in consequence, can, you know, as it gets wet, you run the risk of having that brick go through freeze-thaw cycles, which can ultimately damage the brick irreparably. So the main thing, the first thing to do is really figure out how that wall is constructed. It's really important to have a gap between the brick and your existing weather barrier. And so if you can determine that that's the way in which the wall is constructed, then I think it's safe to insulate the stud wall with dense pack cellulose.
I think maybe I didn't explain it thoroughly enough. These are two different parts of the house. The part that I was talking about with the Thermax insulation, the blue styrofoam board, is actually a stud wall that does not have brick on it. And as I understand it, the only way to insulate a brick, the brick house part of the house, would be from the interior. Correct?
Correct. And that's what I'm suggesting on the original part of the house.
Uh-huh. Okay, so I would have to drill holes through the plaster and then blow in cellulose?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's one way to do it. It's a little bit risky, as I mentioned, because the durability of the brick really relies heavily on that wall being able to dry both interior and to the exterior.
I see.
And so, you know, there are back in the 30s, brick, you know, was, you know, there was some good brick, there was medium brick, and then there was really poor brick. And so the poor brick generally absorbed more water than the really good brick. And if you have a brick that absorbs an inordinate amount of water and you insulate that interior wall, you really run a high risk of having that brick go through freeze-thaw cycles and
see that.
Consequently damaging the brick.
I see. So maybe leaving that part alone would be the best idea. But on to the addition to the house that was built in 1975, is my idea about pulling off the composite board exterior and then putting a surface of blue styrofoam over the top and then house wrap a reasonable thing to do?
With what type of siding?
I was thinking about using a concrete board.
Okay.
Cement board.
Cement board. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very reasonable thing to do. If you put the foam on, you really want to be able to tape all the joints. you really need to then put a weather-resistive barrier, a Tyvek or something over that. And then I really like to create a drainage plane or rain screen behind the siding for a number of reasons. One is vapor pressure equalization, as well as really just the long-term longevity of the paint finish on the siding that you put up.
Mm-hmm. I see. Very good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate
Thank
it. You. We have an email from Tom who says we own a lovely two-story 1935 Dutch Colonial in Whitewater. Heating is natural gas, forced air, central air. The second floor rooms tend to be noticeably cooler in the winter and warmer in the summer due to what appears to be restricted airflow. What strategies are there to address the problem? A lot of that can start in the basement, I expect.
It can, though. I mean, typically when you have an upper floor that is, warmer in the summer and cooler in the winter, it has a lot to do with air leaking into the house. And so you've got that summer air, that the hot air that's probably leaking in from the attic. And then, in the wintertime, it's less comfortable up there because the cold air is leaking in. So what I would recommend, a good first step would be to have that home performance with Energy Star assessment done to see how leaky is the house, where are the leaks, to assess the overall thermal envelope of the home. And then with that information, professional insulators or heating contractors would be able to troubleshoot knowing exactly what the pre-existing conditions are.
Yeah, one of our previous homes, we went with a zone system, a zone heating and air conditioning system that helped after we had done, a lot of the work to sort of tighten it up and everything.
Right. Well, that's certainly a way to go if the house is relatively tight and well insulated. And then certainly another thing to look at is just adjusting the dampers on the heating system.
That's why I mentioned the basement.
right. But if the primary cause of the comfort issues and performance have to do with a leaky shell, then I would say, you could certainly just pump more heat up there in the winter and then, condition it better in the summer, but you're still going to be fighting a losing battle.
Lori in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
I recently had a new metal roof put on my 1958 simple prefab home. It has eaves on one side only. We added 4-inch gutters because of lots of tree debris, leaves, and that sort of thing to handle all the water. And I'm suddenly, I shouldn't say suddenly, I've had terrible ice damming problems. And the roofer, we talked about insulation several times and ventilation. He said the two gables vents are just fine, and my insulation was more than adequate. And I'm very frustrated. I do not have any vents on the side of the house with the overhang edge going down to the edge. But it's happening on both sides of the house where the roof meets just the house directly on the side, too. So
yeah.
They were And I thought my problems were over, and I had no issues anymore.
And they're not. You're breaking up a little bit, but I think we've got the gist of your call. Sam, a comment?
So, sure. Lori, is it a standing seam roof, or is it a metal shingle type?
Standing seam.
Okay.
Standing seam.
And what do you know the dimension of the rafters that, how thick the rafters are?
I'm sorry, I wouldn't know that.
Okay. And are you getting interior water damage from the ice dams?
No. They put it right over the old roof and put a sheathing of some sort of water protection on the roof prior to. There's no water damage occurring, but my gutters are just twisted, and they are steel as well. And I can't open my front door all the way because they've sunk down with the weight.
Oh,
right.
Boy, wow.
So anytime that we put on a new roof, whether it's an asphalt roof or a metal roof, if we do not address the existing insulation details, then we have to make absolutely sure that there's a ventilation space between the roof shingles and the and the insulation or the sheathing.
And that's probably where the problem lies. You might have to have somebody else come and take a look at it and see, Lori, and get an opinion from somebody. We'll ponder on this. We need to take a quick look at the weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. We'll think some more about your question. We'll come back with some answers right after we take a look at the news. Stay with us. There are more and more green options for home repair out there and for remodeling and construction, but maybe what's the best choice for your project? Larry Mueller here. Glad you could be along today on the Ideas Network. My guests know all about that, excuse me, and a whole lot more. And they are Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and Sam Breidenbach of TDS Construction in Madison. And Chad and Sam are here for the next half hour to help you. They've got some creative ideas for taking care of your home and saving energy at the same time. Always happy to answer your questions. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Or you can go to my Facebook page. Go to The Larry Mueller Show. That's the name of the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question or a photo there. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back after the news. Some of the best investments we can make in our home can also help us minimize our impact on the environment. But with all the different options to weigh out there, I know it can be difficult to know how to make a smart decision. Larry Mueller here. Great to have with us today Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and Sam Breidenbach of TDS Custom Construction in Madison with us to answer your questions and offer advice as we talk with them about home maintenance and repair. Chad, Sam, great to have you with us. Thanks so much for sticking around here. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
We had Lori, who visited with us earlier, and she had a 1958 home, put on some new metal roofing, thinking that was going to solve some issues, and usually it does, but she wound up with a lot of ice damming, and she's got sagging, has a hard time opening her door even.
Right, the gutter. Yeah, and we were talking about that during the break, and there are multiple issues here. I mean, the good thing about a metal roof is they do a great job of keeping the water on the outside of the house, typically.
Yeah.
But if a lot of heat is escaping, then they're not going to solve the ice dam problem. And so we're thinking that she's probably got a problem with the insulation right over top of that exterior wall down along the eave. Mm-hmm. And so if they can find a way probably to have it assessed, have a home performance assessment done and confirm that, and then an insulation contractor might be able to come in and properly foam or dense pack above that wall plate up in the attic. It's going to be a tight space. It's going to be hard to address it.
Yeah.
But one of the things we were talking about is in older homes, a lot of times you don't have what a new home has, which is called an energy heel, which gives you a large space above the exterior wall to properly insulate and ventilate. Sometimes you have to pick one or the other. You're either going to properly insulate it, or if you ventilate it, you're giving up on really being able to insulate it because there's just not enough room there. Sometimes we'll only have 2 or 3 inches of space going above the wall plate to the roof deck. So many times the strategy we've used with our clients is just to foam that solid so that we maximize the R value and the air sealing. We're not allowing heat to escape. We're minimizing any thermal transfer up to the roof deck.
Yeah.
And then we're just allowing the attic itself to be ventilated. We've had great success with that strategy, but you have to get the details right to do it.
To make it work. We had somebody wondered if you can buy new windows that give that old style wavy glass look or have them in them. I don't think so. Or am I wrong, Sam?
I think there are a couple of, one source in Madison that I know of, and it's Deconstruction. Roxanne is the proprietor there. She may have old glass, but I'm not exactly sure. Other than that, you could probably do a web search and perhaps find, some resource for that.
Yeah. It's typically just not made now. That's for sure. But you never know. There might be somebody out there who's doing that. Scott just bought a drafty old house that has no insulation in the walls and almost none in the attic. Can the walls be insulated without ripping them apart? Maybe. Well,
it's typically possible to do that. We might need to know a few more details about that, but it's common to dense pack exterior walls by drilling from the outside. You remove a few courses of the shingles to be able to drill holes and gain access into those stud cavities. And again, if the siding can be removed and without damaging it too much, or if it is damaged, it can be replaced. That's an important detail. And then it is also possible sometimes to drill from the inside if the exterior siding or cladding is too difficult or costly to remove, or it's too delicate to remove, and you don't want to damage that.
Yeah,
you do it from the inside. Again, we've talked on the show today about some of the things we have to be concerned about. If water is getting into those walls, we don't want to be causing new moisture problems that didn't previously exist. And certainly the wiring needs to be up to code.
Jay in Suring, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hello, Larry. How are you guys today?
Great. What's on your mind?
Say, I'm going to be, my plan is to be replacing some old wood clapboard. It's like got a 4-inch reveal on it. But my problem is, well, maybe kind of just a question. Is there a difference between using like that the old tar paper or felt paper and or using the like that house wrap with the, it's kind of like, got like a built-in air vent kind of system behind it? Is there an advantage to using one or the other?
Sam, what do you think?
Are you going to replace it with vertical grain cedar?
I want to stay with the original wood clapboard cedar siding, painted cedar siding.
Okay. What I would recommend... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What I would recommend is... you know, first of all, making sure that the cavity insulation is up to snuff before you do it, because it offers a great opportunity to dense pack those walls from the exterior when you remove your old siding.
Okay, I guess as far as that goes, I have, like, my lower level was insulated back in the 1980s with from the exterior. It was a blown-in type product. It seems to be holding up, and it was a few years ago that my grandparents had it, had the upper level insulated, so that seems to be okay as far as I know.
Okay. With wood siding, wood is a very, you know, it expands and contracts quite a bit, so...
Mm-hmm.
Before you put it up, you really want to make sure that all six sides of the siding is sealed. And what I would do is, you know, for a really Cadillac job is to really create an airspace behind that siding. It'll really preserve the finish on the siding, as well as, you know, provide that drainage plane. But then all you really need is maybe a quarter inch, 3/8 of an inch. There are some products on the market that Home Slicker is one that will provide that air barrier that would then be installed over a building paper such as Tyvek. You really want to make sure that you know, the Tyvek, which is a weather, an air barrier, is fully taped at all the seams. And then you can put that Home Slicker or furring strips over that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I guess I thought there was a product that, you know, with the house wrap itself, I thought I had seen it on one of the shows that it was, you know, it's got like a built-in, like a almost like a diamond-shaped air, you know, it creates an airspace behind that where you wouldn't have to put, like, furring strips on.
Tyvek makes what they call a drain wrap, and it's basically resembles sort of a corrugated, product. You know, and that's something that you could use.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Jay. Appreciate it. And Pete in Bellevue, Iowa, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Question about countertops. I have a 1969 70 Circle Home Ranch. The joist system, floor system is solid. The lumber probably was superior back then as far as joists. But I know that granite can be fairly heavy, it takes two or three guys to lift it in place. There's an LG product, of course, Promica. And I heard that sometimes granite is a bit noisier surface. Something drops on it like a fork. You can hear it from one room to another, whereas maybe an LG composite is. Just kind of wondering about off-gassing, too, regarding any of these new products. Any thoughts that they have regarding surfaces that are natural versus, other surfaces that are glued together or whatever.
You see cement ones out there now, too, countertops.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. And, there's already cement floor, or I should say board. I tiled the floor myself, so there's cement and tile already on the kitchen floor. So I'm just kind of wondering about weight limits issues. Obviously, they don't want to talk about it or don't talk about it when I ask about those issues. So kind of wondering about that. The floor span is only 12 or at the most 14 feet from weight-bearing wall to the outside wall. So we're not talking great distances.
Well, there are a number of issues that you're bringing up, and I would say the structural issues can be analyzed in a fairly straightforward manner, looking at the pounds per square foot of the material that's being installed and then analyzing the floor system itself to see if you're going to be putting, an unusual or excessive burden on that, which would likely compromise it. Generally, we don't see that except in cases where the house clearly was underbuilt. And if you have those concerns about your home, then you would want to be mindful of the material choices. But typically, a house will be able to handle granite countertops, for example. But you're correct. It is a substantial load.
It seems to be, like I say, the joist system seems to be either for sure a 2x12 underneath the kitchen floor. It seems to be quite solid. I guess I shouldn't say there's any sagging or anything. It seems to be very solid, but that was just a concern because I know I have tile already on the floor with cement board.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of choices, any thoughts on that or off-gassing issues, noise level issues or differences?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that when we've looked into what choices there are for countertops and to what extent one is more environmentally friendly than others, countertops are a tough area because some of the reclaimed or more paper-based or kind of environmentally friendly products tend not to last very long, or they have extreme problems with respect to ongoing maintenance and upkeep. And they also tend to be very expensive products. There can be issues with stone and granite, certainly with respect to, it's the environmental impact, though it is a slab of stone. I think it's a relatively healthy thing generally to have in your house. However, just read an article, last month about the potential for radon being in the stone itself and then, contaminating a home by bringing a slab of radon impregnated granite into your home. So,
that's what I read as well. And I wanted to see if you flushed that out as well. And I don't know about the LG product that it seems to be quieter countertop, but if that's a man-made product or if you know anything about that.
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay.
It sounds like it's a quartz, man-made quartz product.
Right.
Personally, I think plastic laminate really gets a bum rap, and I think it's a wonderful product as long as you use a water-based contact adhesive. and a formaldehyde-free substrate, you're good to go for a long, long time, and it's very economical.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Here we were talking about wavy glass, and I knew this was going to happen as soon as we mentioned it, that you couldn't get it. Somebody would call and say, you can get it, and sure enough, at Lighthouse Art Glass in Madison, and house is spelled the old kind of way, H-A-U-S. So it's Light, L-I-G-H-T, Lighthouse Art Glass in Madison. You can special order glass like the wavy glass for windows, and they have a website. So the easiest way, lighthouseartglass.com. And again, house is H-A-U-S, so lighthouseartglass.com. We'll get you there. There you go. Do you guys have websites, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah. What's
mine is really the name of my company, tdscustomconstruction.com. No punctuation, hyphens, just all one word.
All one word, and...
Same for me. It's Chad, chadscarpentry.com. No punctuation.
All right. I think we've got you guys up. Yeah, Judith says, of course we got them up on our Facebook page. So you can go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and click right on to them as well. Tom in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. We've got our main bedroom is on the second floor, and there are two cold air returns. I've been told that I should get magnetic vent covers. Would I cover both of them up or one up?
Well, I don't think you should cover any of them up. The cold air return is an integral part to the efficient functioning of your system.
Yeah. So it.
Yeah, I mean, you could have it analyzed, certainly. I mean, I think we've all seen, it's like any other trade, you know, you see houses that are well-designed, have a well-designed air handling system, and then some that you wonder kind of what they were thinking when they laid this out. And so, and of course, sometimes the design of a house itself will drive the ductwork to be in places that are less than ideal. So it could be that some tweaking would be helpful, but generally... you having a professional assess airflows and things like that is the best way to
go.
Do that.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Julia in Chadwick, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. I have a couple answers that might help people. The lady with the mold, and I have that black mold, believe me. Bleach washing down usually kills that. But there is a product in the health food store called Tea tree oil. And tea tree oil, it's absolutely fabulous. One or two drops in a gallon of water, and that mold will not come back. that's my advice. And the man that called very early in the show about the problem with the old windows.
Yes.
Number one is he absolutely really needs to get those windows out to work on them. Because the danger to breaking them with, if they're not flat, is much stronger than not getting them out. And I have some...
And that's true. You got a thumbs up from all of us here.
Absolutely. He's being stubborn about that. but he's causing more danger by leaving them in and trying to work on them. I have a house that's 102 years old, or 111 years old, I'm sorry, this year. And the glaze on old windows is absolutely cement. I mean, it's just pure cement. That's the only way I can describe it. And I found loosening it with some paint and varnish remover and then gently applying a chisel downward between the glaze and the wood, just tapping it real gently till you get an opening. And then you can scrape along gently and get that stuff out. But you have to soften it with the paint and varnish remover. Even then, it's still like cement. And I guess I was on the line waiting for you, and I didn't hear. Somebody must have problems with old glass, too. and I had a stained glass window restored by a place in Berwyn, Illinois, and he used a product called French glass, and it looks like the beautiful old glass with the wavy.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my glass even has little bubbles in it. Is it handmade back then? Is it hand-blown?
Was it handmade back then? By the way, thanks for calling, Julia. Was it handmade? I don't know.
Glass?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, that's what they did. They did it by hand.
Yeah.
And, Julia, you sound like a pretty handy person. I thank you so much for calling, for the advice, and for your comments. I appreciate it very much. I want to give Paul in Boston a chance. You got a quick question, Paul?
Yeah, I've got a newer home, but I've got a problem with condensation on the second floor windows only. The house is constructed, the bottom is modular, and the second floor was stick-built. So I'm wondering, I probably need to replace those windows because they're getting dry rot, but I'm wondering what I can do to prevent reoccurrence.
Condensation, okay.
Yeah, well, so it's very common to see the moisture on the second floor, and that has to do with just the thermodynamics and physics of a home. It's something called the stack effect, and air is pulled in from the bottom and driven out at the top. And so the holes in the house at the top of the house are the windows. And so what will happen is air is driving to those windows, and then simultaneous to that, the heat also is rising. And so we have the warm air upstairs, which is hitting those cool windows, and it's condensing. And so changing the window is not likely to fix the problem. The problem is the level of humidity in the house and the lack of ventilation to allow the moist air to be able to be regulated. I would recommend a home performance evaluation to help you assess that. It'll give you a lot of great information on the house itself, other things that are going on. And then if the windows have been repaired or have been damaged beyond repair with respect to the dry rot and moisture or some mold, then it might be appropriate to replace them. But I think you want to address those other problems first. It might be as simple as ventilating better above the stove or something like that to reduce moisture in the house.
Or running the vent in the bathroom.
Correct.
A longer period of time.
Right. Putting on a 24-hour timer on the bath fan is really a great option there.
Yeah. Just, they should run a 20 minutes, half hour after showering, and almost never do unless you have a timer on them.
Right, and they have timers on the market which will run the fan in various intervals depending upon how you program it on a 24-hour cycle. The tricky part there is just making sure that the bath fan is quiet.
Guys, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your next visit. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Sam Breidenbach, owner of TDS Custom Construction in Madison. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. We'll have them back in a couple of months, and we'll do it all over again. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.